It's now time for The Long View with Neil Milner, and today we're talking sex ed classes. Remember, Pono Choices. I remember that. I've done many of those stories.
Yeah, the Pono Choices ones. I mean, this is not my personal experience. I'm so old that there was no sex, not to mention sex education, when I was growing up.
Okay.
I got interested in this because it's the beginning of the year and because sex education has become very important, very controversial, and because there's an interesting kind of duality here. On the one hand, a lot of them have been studied in a scientific sort of way to see whether they work, whether they particularly reduce teenage pregnancy, whether they increase knowledge about proper sexual behavior, and whether they increase the knowledge and maybe even reduce the amount of sexually transmitted diseases. There are clearly lots of studies that have been able to do this. But the other side of it is that these studies, and if you can look at commonalities that these studies have, but when you try to say, is there a formula that you can give to a school district like Hawaii that says this is the way to do it, the answer is no, because there are so many variables. So we can be much more certain about what kind of program does not work. Like abstinence education, time and again has been shown not to do any of these things. And we can show in a general sense what seems to make a difference. Curriculum, paying attention to goals. But for the haggard administrator or teacher to say, here's a way you plug a program in, that depends much more on local variables and how you do it, which is, of course, brings us back to Hawaii Pono Choices.
Right, and you've got to look at your community. What's going to work in your community? What's your demographic, you know, what could be the most effective way to reach these kids?
Well, that's right. Now, again, that's the difference between the general and the specific. We know in a general sense that the effective programs tended to pay very close attention to assessing the needs of their particular community and then running pilot studies. The problem is that there are so many different ways that these programs can work that have been effective that when you look at some last 1 year, some last 4 years, some things do differently. We know that it's, again, hard to say how do you do that in a general sense. I mean, the other thing that seems to be important, by the way, that I should mention is that most of the effective programs build some kind of role-playing and scenario building into this because they say, I mean, think of what you were like in intermediate school for any subject. If you don't engage, and particularly one like this, if you don't engage students in role-playing and scenarios, it doesn't mean anything. So you have to create a safe space. But again, so you have all this general knowledge, but to make it work where you are, you've got to do the hard work in your community to do these particular assessments.
And I think I know this program, the Pono Choices, was developed at the University of Hawaii College of Education, and they were hoping to tailor it. So when the kids looked at it, they saw kids that looked like them.
That's right. They called the program kind of culturally sensitive. That was important to them. If you look at the assessment of Hawaii Pono Choices, there was a study done in 2016. They had brought in a company that does this sort of stuff. And what they did was to look at the changes they took some schools that went on Hawaii Pono Choices and some that did the more conventional, the older ways of doing sex education. The Hawaii Pono Choices students clearly learn much more facts about at the end of a particular period, they knew much more about the facts of sexuality. It didn't increase promiscuity. It didn't increase pregnancy. It didn't do any of those things, kind of reduce it. The interesting thing is, though, when you compare them to the schools that didn't do it this way, and remember how much went into Hawaii Pono Choices. There was lots of controversy. They set up committees. The university got involved. It was very carefully and pretty politically savvy the way they did it. It turns out that on attitudes and on other kinds of things about sexuality, the Hawaii Pono Choices does okay, but so do the other kind of programs. So I guess I don't know what the lesson is from that. The lesson may be that both programs were pretty good. The lesson is that there are small changes that happen in each of those. But again, it points out how difficult it is to make definitive statements here about the best way of doing things.
Yeah, there's lots of discussion to be had around this topic. And I know the whole idea of being culturally sensitive is an important one, because I remember growing up, you know, in a small island community, you know, we had books that where the kids were either black or white. There was
sure.
You know, nobody brown, you know. And so I think that's a very good thing, I think, that the Pono Choices did, was to try and make it more local. You know,
well, not even. Yeah, that's right. Here it would be more local. Other places is, what are the kids like? I mean, what are they like, and how do you build a program into that sort of likeness? And that's the art. It's, you know, it's so much to me sounds like a lot of things about teaching and education, where are there these big controversies out there, right? Should you have choice or not choice? Is charter school better than public school? Should sex education even be taught? Those are the big issues. But a lot of it comes down to just nuts and bolts stuff. How do you build a curriculum that makes kids, that helps kids or makes kids or whatever you want to say, know more and be better citizens than they were before? And that's, again, that's doesn't sound as sexy as the big issues. And anybody who develops these programs knows that you're going to get into big issues things, because there still are these cultural issues about what's appropriate and what's moral and what are you trying to teach. And that's why abstinence education hangs on, even though it doesn't work. But when you come right down to it, a lot of this is about the same thing that you have when you try to develop other kinds of curriculum. It's just hard infantry work.
Right. And I know with a lot of these programs, when they get developed, it's federally funded.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's lots of discussion about
that. There's lots of discussion about that, and it depends on who's in power at the time. And a lot of the federal funds for some of these programs during the second Bush presidency went for abstinence education. And that still is a kind of part of the social conservative belief system. And when I say they don't work, what I'm really suggesting is two things. The evidence suggests that they don't work at all, and it's pretty strong. But that says nothing about the cultural side, where people either don't believe that. I mean, there's nothing new about not believing science. It's part of the condition today. But also that it doesn't make any difference whether that's true or not. There's a broader issue of privacy and appropriateness and whether schools should be teaching this stuff at all.
Right. But in some of these studies, they point out that just because you expose the kids to this information doesn't mean they're out there breeding like rabbits.
Oh, no, no. For sure it doesn't mean that. None of these studies really show that kind of thing. If kids want to breed like rabbits, they don't need the schools to help them. No, these, for sure, they don't do that kind of stuff. There's a little bit of suggestion in the abstinence-only things. Some of the studies show there is a slight increase in, let's call it, bad sexual behavior, but it's very slight. For the most part, it doesn't have any effect. And if the programs don't have any effect, why have them? And
right.
And the ones I'm talking about here that are effective in the ways that I talked about it, reducing certain kinds of behavior.
Right, but it doesn't really then help our beleaguered educators or administrators who are trying to figure out what's the right path going.
No, that's right. And this ties into the story that you did right before about early education, where there's so many things out there that you want to do. By the way, this may not be a perfect world, but a whole lot of places have, a whole lot of cities and states have universal pre-K, including some that are run by very conservative, states that are very conservative Republicans who have gone ahead and done this, and we haven't.
All right. Well, we're not going to solve this with Neil.
No. It reminds everybody, it should remind everybody how hard it is to be a teacher.
That's right. Okay. Thanks so much.
Sure.
We've been chatting about sex ed classes with our contributing editor, Neil Milner.